The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Well, now it's time for our Friday forum, and after what appeared to be an endless count in the Euro elections, we finally have everybody elected, including one of our guests, Lynn Boylan of Sinn Féin. Lynn, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
A long wait, was it?
Yeah, but not as long as Midlands Northwest or Ireland South. So
yeah,
I think Dublin got away lightly.
Dublin got sorted fairly quickly. Now, I'm told that you were knitting during the count. Is that true?
I was, yeah. I've taken up knitting.
When I heard about this, I thought of Madame Defarge from A Tale of Two Cities. And you're there knitting a long scarf with the names of all the defeated candidates who are being sent to the scrap heap rather than the guillotine.
I wasn't that brutal. I'm just knitting a cardigan, which then was lost. So I've now located who took the bag.
Oh really?
Yeah,
your knitting bag was...
Someone took it away from...
Such was the euphoria on the moment of, passing the post.
It's been located, so...
So, Colm, we'll come back to Lynn on Sinn Féin's achievements. A good week for the government parties, bar... Unfortunately, Eamon Ryan's Greens.
A very good week, I think, for particularly Fine Gael. A very good week for Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. The Greens had some good performances. They had some performances which didn't, obviously, they wouldn't be happy with, and some losses coming out of it. But I think overall, particularly from our perspective in Fine Gael, it showed a couple of things. It showed the recognition by the public of the work being done by this government. It showed, I think, a lot of recognition of Simon Harris's new leadership and the energy he has brought to that and the impact which that had on our support. So in terms of, for me personally, I have a number of extra councillors in my constituency. I was the campaign manager for Regina Doherty's campaign in Dublin, so I was very pleased with that. And
were you responsible for her attacks on the Greens, your coalition?
I wasn't, and we didn't set out to attack the Greens. What we did, as always we do, as any candidate will do in an election, is to make our points and to make the points that Regina was both passionate about and hearing back quite clearly. And that's what we did. And we never get offended when... I know Kieran Cuff had a pop at the Taoiseach a couple of weeks earlier and whatever. There is a certain element of politics that involves campaigning and that involves, even when you're in government together, political parties which have their own views and their own ideas and have a right to say.
But wasn't it Catherine Martin who said, you know, grow up, guys, you know, all this popping up the green agenda when it is an existential problem for the planet and not to be making electoral gains at the expense of that green agenda?
Look, the main thing about this is that political parties and candidates will always retain the right to express themselves. But the three parties work well together in government. I think people recognise that. I think the transfer rate between the three parties was very good. Looking at tallies across the Euros and looking at transfers and eliminations when they came through, there is a solid base of support in the country for the government, and that was willing to recognise that they are three separate parties, but they do work well together. And this is a government which is actually delivering and is doing things that people want to see happen on the ground.
Now, Lynn, your party had ambitions to get more Euro seats and also local seats. Now, you did better than you had, but still not up to your ambitions. What is your analysis of what did not work for the party this time?
Well, I think first there's a narrative out there that somehow Sinn Féin went backwards in this election when in actual fact we increased our vote share and increased the number of seats both at local level and at European level. My sympathies go out to Chris McManus because I know what it's like to lose your seat. It's a bruising experience.
So was it a tactical mistake?
I think, look, we're going to have an analysis. And of course, all political parties do that after an election. I'm not going to share my views with you today, but I will come back after that review takes place. I have my own views on some of the things that we probably did get wrong. But, you know, the narrative that Sinn Féin somehow lost is incorrect because the facts stand up that we have actually increased our vote share. I think there was a low turnout and the sense definitely that there was political apathy out there. I think people are feeling defeated in that anybody can fix the crisis because it's so bad after 13 years of Fine Gael.
Now, do you think
that's a bit insulting, by the way, I think, to the electorate. That's a Mary Lou line that she tried as well, that people are feeling defeated. People didn't vote for you.
People didn't come out and vote. They weren't feeling defeated.
They just didn't vote for you. And they didn't vote for you in any particular numbers.
They voted for government parties overwhelmingly.
I think let's stop insulting the electorate here.
Less people voted for your party this election than they did in 2019. Well, that's the facts, Colin.
And your own party compared to the last election.
You compare the local election, less people voted for Fine Gael in this local election than they did.
Can you discern? I should introduce Craig Hughes, who's the political editor with the Irish Daily Mail, but also co-founder of the Night and Day Festival, with which News Talk are partnering. I better make that clear, put everything on the table. What do you discern between the arguing facts?
I think it's clear that Sinn Féin would have been disappointed with their performance. I think if you go back to May 2022, when they would have been on 36% in the polls, you know, polling above 20, you know, going into the election, you know, well over 20, to come in with a first preference vote, you know, closer to 12% is undoubtedly disappointing. And I think there will have to be, and they will obviously have a review about, you know, running two candidates in Midlands and North West, for example. They managed to get an MEP over the line in the South, but again, you'll have to wonder, was that the right strategy? Going back to the government and the government side of the house, you know, there was quite a lot of infighting between the three parties. We'd Pauline O'Reilly of the Greens sending Lisa Chambers a book about wind energy for dummies, but I think someone might need to send the Green Party Shane Ross's memoir of his time in government with the blue shirts, which opened with the line that Fine Gael normally eat their young, and I think that might be a lesson for the junior coalition partners, that they need to sharpen their elbows if they're to survive the political jungle.
Yeah. Now, Colin was making the point that the electorate are not stupid, although that there might be some evidence that part of the electorate might be a bit stupid. What Pat Rabbit referred to on Sunday as the fruitcake end of the spectrum. The fruitcake end did not do well.
It depends how you look at it. I think when you're trying to frame these elections going forward into a general election, it is very different. I think, you know, anyone who's been around elections for a long time will tell you that. Even the former Taoiseach Leo Varadkar sat in the studio and said, look, they're secondary elections and people vote on different issues. When you go back to the last general election, it was dominated, of course, by health and housing, but you had the event, it was dominated by events, whether it was Charlie Flanagan's ORIC commemoration, whether it was pensions. So when you go forward to the next general election, you're going to be looking at immigration is still going to be a big issue. Health and housing have taken a small back seat, and that's, I guess, the challenge of Sinn Féin is to bring that back on the table, which is the ground they're safe on. But again, elections are unpredictable. General elections are unpredictable, and it will be dominated by the recent events running into it. That's why the timing is so crucial.
Yeah, and there's no doubt, depending on the timing of the election, health could be in the frame with trolleys and so on. Yeah, so it'll bring itself back into the frame.
But also, let's look at immigration, for example. I think that the Taoiseach has kind of taken ownership of this issue in a sense, and I think he's got a bit of support for that by veering a bit, taking a more hardline approach to it. So my analysis would be that it now would be a very favourable time, an early election for the Taoiseach to go to the country, because that's an issue that has the potential to get a lot worse, you know, come March if you went full
and
term.
And your party leader, Lynn, was actually calling for an instant election, wasn't she?
Well, we're ready for an election because we said we don't believe that housing, health or the cost of living crisis can last much longer particularly under Fine Gael, because it is a crisis across the board in all of those areas. And then when you see the mismanagement of the migration issue as well, but it does suit Fine Gael to deflect and sort of try and take a hard line on migration and not talk about housing, not talk about health, not talk about the cost of living, or to take pops at their own coalition partners around lanes when in fact Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are in the majority of most of the local authorities that are actually putting
but
those bike lanes.
The clarity that we saw it from Mary Lou when she was in here about migration and what she envisages as opposed to tents on Dublin's canal banks. And she seemed to indicate we'd have these tented villages all over the country.
Well, no, what we want is the implementation of the Catherine Day report, which is 4 years sitting on a shelf now. It hasn't been implemented. We do need to see human rights compliant reception centres and a move away from privately owned buildings, because we're seeing individuals making vast sums of money on the back of people's misery that are seeking asylum, and us also alienating some communities because they are losing, say for example, their last hotel. So we need a system that's human rights compliant. We need a system that works, and that's not what has been happening.
If no one's being sent home and you've got so many, 30,000 people coming looking for international protection, the question that I put to her and I put to you, where do you house the people? Where are the locations, be they bricks and mortar locations or be they tents?
Well, look, you have to have a rules-based system. That's the reality of any migration. And look, people come for different reasons. There are people who are seeking, fleeing persecution, fleeing war. There are also people who are coming because they're trying to better their lives. Sure. And the Irish know that better than anyone else. But I suppose the reality is if someone is using the asylum process to come here and their asylum application fails, well, then the rules do have to apply. But we have to be human rights compliant about it. And we have to put in place decent facilities for people.
No, but if you're looking to be the lead...
Nobody should be living in tents, regardless of whether they're
the
living
question.
In Ireland or whether they're coming
to
Ireland.
If you were to be
refuge.
The lead party in a government after the election, which will be in a few months' time, one way or the other, where would Sinn Féin be putting... the people? I mean, what bricks and mortar facilities, or alternatively, what tented facilities and where? Because you have to have a policy.
Yeah, but the government know where the 6 reception centres are going to go. They're not sharing that information with anybody in the opposition, but they do know where
those
reception
centres...
But
do you not have your own minds made up on where you'd like to put them?
No, because we don't have the full analysis of the OPW data about sites that are serviced, what sites are available. All of that work is ongoing. But the government are deliberately withheld that information before the
election. You're withholding information from... your political opponents and from the public.
No, I mean, the situation is that the government has been working on the type of system that we want, and I think the Taoiseach has taken a very strong lead in this, and Roger O'Gorman has been very clear in what he wants to see in terms of proper reception centres and built. I think we've started the process with Thornton Hall. I think there's a clear indication of where and how we would deliver. And I think it's just a matter of time, like in any announcement, of making sure that you have everything correct and then make the announcement. So I think that's what the government is working through at this moment in time. But what is important is the recognition, and some of which I would agree with what Lynn said, is that you need a fair and robust system.
You need a quick system.
Well, you do need a quick system. I mean, that's one of the key things that the changes that the government has brought in is to bring down this situation where people would arrive and there would be effectively years would go by to bring down a situation which is fairer to everybody, where a decision is made in a relatively short period of time. Because if people are genuinely fleeing and need to be offered international protection, we have to do that.
Do you not need a longer list of so-called safe countries? And if people arrive from a safe country, they get back on the plane.
Well,
what's wrong with that kind of rigorous system? So the message goes out, if you're from Nigeria has been the place where most people were coming from, their economy's in the doldrums, but it's no more dangerous than it was 10 years ago.
Okay,
two
things I'd say to you on that. The first is, in general, I agree with what you're saying. You do need a more rigorous system. You do need a system that defines. I think you still have to preserve at the heart of it, though, the right for an individual to make an individual case, because there can be situations in any country where an individual can make a genuine case, and that can even include cases in countries which you would be perceived as being on
absolutely.
The
absolutely.
Yeah,
so.
No, I think that's a fair point, but the idea of having more countries on the slaves list means that it's a presumption that you won't get status, and so you have to jump over extra hurdles
Is that not a reasonable situation, that your country is safe, but you may have your own personal reason for requiring protection, and we're willing to look at that.
Yeah, well, and I think they have added countries to the safe list, and there's a current review ongoing as well to go further than that. But I think the real issue is processing these applications. It's taken far too long. And then to go back to the point that everyone is sick of hearing, that when deportations are ordered or in other countries under the Dublin Regulation agree to take them back, we haven't been effective in doing that. And that's the problem long term for the government. If they can't show that the system is working, they won't have any credibility on the issue.
Yeah, well, we heard this morning already on the programme about the 10,000 people had their licence taken from them by the courts. One person prosecuted for not handing it over.
Yeah, and that's the difficulty when again, as the Taoiseach has kind of trying to take an ownership of this issue. If in 6 months' time the system still isn't functioning, you know, it'll be a stick for him to be beaten.
So you say go and go now.
I think the move by me by Lisa Chambers, leader of the Shannon, to delay the planning bill until after the autumn has somewhat snookered the Taoiseach on if he wanted to call a snap election.
Yeah, but the planning bill is not fit for purpose anyway. It's too complicated, too cumbersome, open to challenge after challenge after challenge.
And ironically, Pat is also trying to exclude communities from objecting to planning applications or making submissions. Regina Doherty talking about dividing communities.
I mean, I think that's really important. The planning bill does not set out to do that.
It absolutely does.
The planning bill sets out to do what so many people want to see, which is to have a better streamlined process that deals with objections that really were coming from whatever, but we're not part of community, it does preserve the right of communities to reject.
And yet not a single stakeholder has said that this bill is fit for purpose, not one.
Yeah. Well, sorry, there is broad consensus that that bill has been
broad consensus
about
within the government.
120 plus hours, I think, of committee and amendment, and there are many obviously different views, the opposition are different views, but the actual planning bill is a very good bill and is much needed.
But nobody involved in planning or development has said
sorry,
the environmental NGOs, the architects, the planners, the developers, everybody has criticised this bill.
Sorry, there are going to be, when you have such a complete reform of a process, there are going to be different people with different views, but I believe that the planning bill is a good bill and is very much fit for purpose.
We have called for it to be simplified. Just a rules-based system. Everyone knows where they stand, and that should be done with it. So if it's a housing area, you build a house, that's fine. Everyone knows what you're going to build. If it's a five-story area, you can build five stories, not six, not seven, with a nod to the minister or the planning board or whatever, the inspector that comes out. You know, the rules are the rules of the rules. Why not do that? And minister after minister says no to that. Anyway, that's for another day. The horse's story. Did you see that Primetime Investigates, Craig?
I did. It was very distressing footage and excellent journalism by my former colleagues in RT Investigates. I think anyone who watched it couldn't help but be distressed at the treatment that was being
But again,
inflicted.
Being done in plain sight and complaints being made and ignored. And you're wondering, who is inspecting these facilities and... Why are they not discerning what is obvious?
It was unbelievable to see that department inspectors were on site, albeit in a different building, and then not having access to the other side. And I think the fallout from all this, which is really significant, is that, you know, these horses ended up potentially in the food chain in Europe. I mean, it really is a scandal.
Lynn?
Yeah, look, I didn't watch it, and that's partly because I'm so tired, and as an animal lover, I couldn't bring myself to watch it, but I will watch it next week. But watching some of the clips just on social media are horrific, but we've seen this before. It was only a few months ago, we've seen similar footage from, I think it was calves being really badly treated, and someone saying that the staff needed better training. Nobody needs to be trained to not beat animals. That's, to me, and that's just basic. And I think the big problem here with the Department of Agriculture is the lack of enforcement. If you look at the number of equine mistreatment cases in 2021, you're talking about one or two cases a year is all that's ever been found. We see similar in the dog industry as well. So the Department of Agriculture needs to get really harsh on enforcement.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree. I believe on the enforcement side, there needs to be a complete overhaul, and you cannot have, because I think it's worth remembering there are thousands and thousands of people employed in that industry. There are thousands and thousands of people who get up every single morning and want to do the best by the animals they're caring for and working with. And it is a disgrace to see that type of thing happening in our country.
All right, on that note, we leave it. Colin Brophy, Lynn Boylan and Craig Hughes, thank you all very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.